Morning. Well, about a week before Thanksgiving, I was driving to my favorite little coffee shop in Rice Village, and I noticed that there was all of a sudden this great big bustle of activity in the area. University Boulevard was exploding with festivities. There were workers who were spiraling little light streamers up the poles and hanging bunting everywhere. One shopkeeper had put together a little blower machine, and it was inflating a blow-up Santa Claus. And when I saw it, it was only about halfway finished, and so it was this red and white and holly jolly blob. And I thought, oh, this is what Christmas is all about. A couple of folks were wiring together a Rudolph that was entirely covered with white LEDs, except, of course, the nose, which was a glowing red. It was all coming together, and this area, Rice Village, was looking ready for the holidays. The holidays like Thanksgiving that hadn't even happened yet, of course. Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, which is celebrated, I guess. And then also, of course, Christmas, and especially Christmas. And there was one little bit of festive decor that caught my attention. It was on the corner of University and Morningside. There was a sign on the top of a building on the roof. And all that sign said was the word hope. Just hope. Now, that word is kind of meaningless without a lot of context. When we talk about hope, there's always the question, okay, what are we hoping in or what are we hoping for? The sign didn't have any context. It was just the word hope. And so I thought, well, there must be something that sign is pointing to when it says hope. And so I looked around at the things that were near the sign, and it was hanging right above two very new, very trendy little boutiques. And so I thought, well, I guess I hope I brought enough money is what they're going for there. Hope. There is a deep association with the word hope in this time that we were in as we are leading toward the Christmas holidays. The word is never really far from our children's lips. I really hope Santa got the letter I sent him. I really hope there's a bike. I hope that whatever is for lunch, chocolate's involved. I hope. It's never really far from ours either. Like I really hope that she likes the present I got. You know, I hope that our time off together is good quality time. I really hope your brother doesn't bring up politics again. There are things that we hope for. Hope is on our lips, it's in the air, it's stenciled on our walls. We hope. I hope the doctor has good news for us, you know. I hope that the agent from FEMA calls me soon. Some of our hopes are a little bit more urgent than others, aren't there? We all know the feeling of hope. Hope in its common usage refers to when we anticipate a future that is better than the present, and we believe that that future, sometimes despite all appearances, is actually possible. That's what it is to hope. Now, hope often gets confused with some things. Hope is not optimism. Optimism is a way of viewing our current circumstances. And so we see the way things are and we focus on the positive things and we minimize or sometimes even just overlook that which is negative. And some of you are natural optimists. The glass is half full, right? The house is burning down, but at least I don't need a blanket anymore. Like, you know, you look at the best, you look at the positive, you want to believe that when something good happens, that is evidence that there is a kind and benevolent universe. But then when something bad happens, well, that's just an exception to the rule. Some of you are natural optimists. Now, there are, of course, in the room, people who are the exact opposite of that, people like me, and we call those sane people, okay? There's optimism. There's a hope is sometimes confused with wishful thinking. Wishful thinking is even worse. In wishful thinking, we lose ourselves in our daydreams of futures that really have no connection to reality. Wishful thinking is an escape mechanism where we ignore our current circumstances. And this escape mechanism, wishful thinking, tends to fall apart when reality finally catches up with us, when there are things in our lives that we can't ignore anymore. Hope isn't that. Hope isn't optimism. It's not wishful thinking. Because hope allows us to look with clarity at the present state of things. We can look with hope at the problems we face as they really are, the crises that face our families and that face our world. And we can do so because we have hope. We have hope that allows us to buckle down and get to work because we believe that we will emerge on the other side of it. Now, hope is important for human flourishing, Psychology Today tells me. Hope is also a really big deal in the Bible. Sometimes hope is described as the kind of giddiness that we often associate with the word, oh, I hope that that present under there is good. Hope can be like that in the Bible. Can you imagine, for example, the hope that Elizabeth must feel in her life? Elizabeth and Zechariah is two people who have waited a long, long, long time for a child. And yet the fact that the angel comes and tells Zechariah that your prayer has been heard tells us that maybe they never stopped hoping. Maybe they didn't stop praying for a child even when it seemed impossible. They waited. And now she is 6 months pregnant. And she can feel her son, John, bouncing around and moving and squirming and keeping her up at night. The little baby who she knows is already destined for God's service. Oh, that's a happy kind of hope, isn't it? But there's another kind of hope, and the Bible actually spends a lot of time describing it. It is a solemn, faithful longing for God in the midst of whatever circumstances we find ourselves in, often in the midst of struggle and pain. Hope in the Old Testament, there are a couple of words that refer to hope. And the one I want to focus on this morning is the word kavah. Beautiful. Kavah is usually translated to wait. But it's actually related to the word kav, and a kav is in Hebrew a cord. And so I brought a cord here to show you what I'm talking about. So this is a kav, right? And then when a cord is pulled tight, then all of a sudden it is in a state of tension. Maybe it's the tension between the way things actually are and the way things ought to be. There is tension here. This is what it means, what it feels like to wait. And some of you are kind of nodding your heads like, yeah, I understand that. Okay, and so hear this. This is Psalm 27. I remain confident in this. I will see the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living. The psalmist is saying, I better see it. Wait, he tells people, kavah, for the Lord. Be strong and take heart and wait for the Lord. Kavah. The next psalm, Psalm 37, verse 9. For those who are evil will be destroyed, but those who hope, those who wait, those who kavah in the Lord will inherit the land. You see, in the Bible, hope has an object. We kavah, we wait with hopeful anticipation for somebody. Hope, biblical hope, isn't just a matter of trusting in our own resilience or calling upon our own inner strength. The tension when it cannot hold anymore, and yes, I got a different cord because there's no way I can break this one. I'm a wuss. So I got a little piece of yarn here. Okay, so when that tightens and you can't hold it anymore, it eventually breaks. And that is when the Lord breaks in and makes things right. That is what Kavah is about. Waiting until the tension cannot hold and God arrives. Hope, as the Bible describes it, is an act of stepping back and remembering what God has done in the past. Our hope is built on our memory. We remember what God has done for us. And because of that, we have faith in what God will do for us in the future. And that allows us then to rest in the moment, even though it's tense, even though it is hard. But we can rest in it with trust. Trust that when God deems that the time is right, He will see us through. And so we have it. Wait for the Lord. Be strong and take heart and wait for the Lord. And a question occurs to me. How much heartbreak have we endured because we have placed our hope somewhere other than in the Lord? Mary's song this morning that we've read and that we've been kind of inching around here is a declaration of crystal clear, no doubt about it, hope. Now we're going to hear it again, and I appreciate Randy reading it. We're going to read it together once more. But before we do, I want us to notice a couple of things. First of all, as we read it, we have some nerds in here, and they're going to notice that there is a particular tense that Mary uses for her verbs. It's all in the past tense. She's describing what God has done. And so we say that biblical hope is based on memory. God has acted in Mary's life and continues to act. She's got a baby miraculously growing inside of her. So He's continuing to act in her life, and it's because of this that she has so much faith that God is going to continue His deliverance for His people that she says it as if it has already happened. It's all in the past tense. She's so sure of it that she talks as though it has already taken place. So let's notice that as we read. The second thing I want us to notice is her voice. Mary gives voice to a particular perspective, a particular people. She speaks as a psalmist, as a prophet of the people Israel, taking Israel and giving voice to all their longings. When she says that God, for example, has lifted up the holy, she's not just simply being humble. The Jews are a small group of people. They're a tiny, kind of oppressed, marginalized group of people. I think sometimes we lose this because the Bible is written from their perspective, and we talk about how they are the people of God, but to the rest of the world, they are nobody. In fact, most people in the world, most people in the Roman Empire don't even know who a Jew is. They have no idea these people even exist. They are small and they are insignificant. They're a conquered tribe, an ethnic group occupying a piece of land that gets traded back and forth between different empires and kingdoms. But Mary voices not just the perspective of Israel. She's also speaking as a woman in a world in which women are not considered full human beings. If we can imagine that. Women who are considered property of the men to whom they belong, if we can imagine that. She speaks to us as a mother who experiences the marginalization of being a single mother, an unwed pregnant mother. And again, we know the story, but most don't. And most importantly, she lends her voice to all who experience that tension of waiting, of Kavah, the folks who are waiting on the Lord. And so let's hear it this morning. My soul magnifies the Lord, she says, And my spirit rejoices in God my Savior, for he has looked on the humble state of his servant. And behold, now all generations will call me blessed, for the Mighty One has done great things for me, and holy is his name. And this is the wonder of God's mercy, not just that he breaks into the world to set things right at the right time, but that he calls people, he elects people like Mary to be his agents in the world. He has called her and lifted her up, but he has called her to partner with her out of a life of obscurity, so that through the Holy Spirit she will bear the Son of God. The Son of God will become the Son of Man. And she rightly understands this. She rightly knows and predicts here that we are going to be talking about this girl for a long time. Now it's been 2,000 years and we're still singing her name. She knows that God has looked with favor on the lowliness of his servant. And so from now on, all generations are going to call her blessed. She is enraptured at the thought of what God is doing with her. But then the language shifts. See, God pours his favorite into Mary, not just because he loves Mary, but because he's got a plan for her out of his love for the entire world. He remembers his people. And so she continues then. His mercy is for those who fear him from generation to generation. He has shown strength with his arm. He has scattered the proud in the thoughts of their hearts. He has brought down the powerful from their thrones and lifted up the lowly. He has filled the hungry with good things, and he has sent the rich away empty. He has helped his servant Israel in remembrance of his mercy, according to the promise he made to our ancestors, to Abraham, and to his descendants forever. His mercy is for those who fear him from generation to generation. Mary's song announces here the coming of the Lord, which is the gospel good news to those who are lowly. And the coming of the Lord will bring healing to the sick. It'll bring the kingdom in which the least will be first and the first will be last. This will be freedom for the oppressed. He will fill the hungry. He will give righteousness to those who are thirsty for it. This is hope for all people who are like Mary. Now, here's the thing. I've been reading the Magnificat here in preparation for this sermon for 2 weeks. And what occurs to me is that I am nothing like Mary. I'm nothing like her at all. I've been familiar with Mary's words for a long time, and this morning I've got to be honest that the circumstances that she describes, the whole context of Mary's hope doesn't describe me very well at all. You see, she gives voice to an oppressed people. I'm not an oppressed person. I was born a citizen of the United States, the wealthiest and most powerful nation that has ever come into existence. Mary lends her voice to people who struggle under the boot of powerful nations. When I hear it, how can I assume that her voice is speaking for me? Within our society, I have never been marginalized. I've never struggled against prejudice or bias. My gender, my skin color, my economic status, my health has never caused somebody to make negative assumptions about me that have affected my life in any real way. Now, some of you have had to fight these battles. Some of you have had to fight against real prejudice and bias. I haven't. And so when Mary lends her voice as, for example, a woman in a patriarchal society, as an unmarried pregnant woman, as somebody who probably lives outside the inner circles of influence and power, and she lends her voice to the poor and the hungry and the lowly, how do I assume that she's talking about me? Now, this is just me. Some of you find that when Mary's gives voice to the oppressed, and when she speaks of God's promised favor for the lowly and for the hungry and the humble, she's speaking right to you. She's speaking into your heart and into your life and into your circumstances. But for some of us, the language that seems more relevant to our experiences is this: He has scattered the proud in the thoughts of their heart. He has brought down the powerful from their throne. The rich He has sent away empty. Like, oh, that's an experience that I know a little bit more about. So here is the question. When Mary speaks of hope, is there hope here for folks like that, for the proud and the arrogant and the rich? Instead, what we have is sounds like judgment. But that's not God's last word for them. Here's the thing. If you're angry, guess what? There's some hope, because God is going to come and He is going to knock you off your high horse. That's a good thing. If you are arrogant and proud and you are self-centered, and God shows up and something happens to you and He shows you just how dumb and short-sighted your ignorance is, your arrogance is, well, that's great. Because now, suddenly, you are closer to the truth than you have ever been. If you are proud and He has scattered you in the thoughts of your heart, fantastic. Because now you are in a place to see Jesus, who is right there waiting for you with grace and mercy. Some of us think that God has appointed us to be the Lord of all that is in our domain. Right? And so if we are in that place, if we are that control freak, if we are addicted to that power, and God shows up and takes that power away, guess what? That is good news. No, it doesn't feel like it, but it is. Because not only now are we closer to surrendering our lust for control and submitting to Jesus, but now we're also closer to understanding what it means to follow Jesus. Jesus, who is the King of all that there is, and who demonstrates that by surrendering His life on the cross for you and me. And if we're rich, and God shows up and He allows us to see poverty and allows us to understand what it is like to rely on God for daily bread, and maybe changes our hearts, and shows us what it means to find Jesus when we serve the least of these, and that is good news. That is hope. You all know where the word humility comes from, right? Yeah, so I didn't know this either. This is a revelation for me. Humility, it's comes from the Latin word humilitis, I think, but its root word there is the Latin word humus, which means, does anybody know? It means dirt. It means earth and soil. And so to be humble, to experience humility, is to consider ourselves as dirt. And so if we are proud and God humbles us and He knocks us off of our high horse and we find ourselves in the dirt, we have been humbled, right? Now, nobody likes this. Nobody likes to think of themselves as dirt. That's not good for my self-esteem. But let me ask, what is it that God does with dirt? What does He do when He takes the soil and He shapes it and He molds it and He breathes life into it? What does He create with the soil of our lives? He creates the agents that He sends out, the very agents of His grace and His mercy and His hope. Mary's Magnificat declares the Lord's everlasting faithful love for all who struggle at the bottom of life. And it declares His merciful judgment, His gracious toppling and routing of all of those at the top. And for us, whether we're at the bottom, we're at the top, we're somewhere in between, Mary declares that the Lord is coming and He is breaking in and He is coming to save. That is the Lord that we worship this morning. If you need to know, if you need to know God's love this morning, we're about to stand, we're going to worship. This is our time of invitation. If you've been living in that place of tension, if you have been waiting for a long time and you're ready for something to break and you need some prayers, come, let us know. Let us pray over you. Let us wash you in our affection, in our prayer, in our understanding. Come, let us stand together, and Josiah is going to lead us in song.